When you started investigating Roswell, and of course you heard everything that we've heard today, were you a little skeptical about that, or did you think you were on the way to finding something just pretty far out?
When we set up the first research trip down to Roswell, I thought we would go down there. We'd find a mundane explanation pretty quickly, because the whole idea of a crash flying saucer had been so thoroughly destroyed in the 1950s with the Aztec thing coming forward, mm-hmm. Frank Scully's book, that almost universally throughout the UFO field, no one accepted these tales of flying saucer crashes. And it wasn't until Len Stringfield started doing his pioneering work collecting these stories and saying, well, maybe there's something to it, we ought to take a look at it. And then, of course, the discovery of Jesse Marcel by Stan Friedman, that we were able to look at this as something more than just one of these urban myth type things. We could never get to the people who were involved. Here was something we could get to the primary people. So when we went down there, I thought we would get to the point we'd talk to the primary people, Bill Brazel, for example, and he would tell us things a little bit differently, mm-hmm. than had been reported in the past, and he'd say, well, here's the mundane explanation that makes sense to us. But we got down and started talking to Bill Brazel, and he's talking about these elements from the craft that just do not have any sort of components in the modern world, and saying, yes, this is what happened, and my father was taken to the base at Roswell. And then, of course, we find Edwin Easley, who was a provost marshal, who says, yeah, we had Mac Brazel locked in the guest house here. And we began to corroborate bits and pieces of the story, so it became clear to me that a mundane explanation wasn't going to be readily available to us. And as we got deeper and deeper into it, the mundane explanation seemed to fall by the wayside.
So what do you think, Kevin, in your opinion, happened on that period of 1947 in July?
I think, to my way of thinking, what happened was a crash of an alien spacecraft.
You do, all right.
And it's based on having talked to a number of the people who are involved in it, such as Bill Brazel, such as Edwin Easley, such as Patrick Saunders, the people who were there and in positions of authority and who should have known what was going on at the base at the time. So I think based on that sort of thing, that makes a pretty compelling case for me that it was alien.
The fact, I'll tell you, of all the different episodes that I've read, and I interviewed a couple people a long time ago, and gosh, I can't find those tapes anymore. The Undertaker was one of the most compelling aspects for me. And I know Friedman talked to Marcel, but the Undertaker talking about the need for three little caskets, that was just unbelievable.
But the problem with the Undertaker is he tells us who the nurse was that he knew, and the nurse never existed.
Oh, really?
And to me, and you know, if we'd had this discussion 7 or 8 years ago, I'd have said, yeah, I'm just on board with this thing. But he told us in confidence. He, you know, standing in a hotel room in Roswell, New Mexico, and we say to him, we need the name of the nurse. And he says, well, I promised I wouldn't tell her, but I'll give you guys the name. It was Naomi Self. And then we spend years looking for Naomi Self, and the conclusion we draw based on the research is there was no Naomi Self who was a nurse at the Roswell base.
Why would he make that up?
Because it's a wonderful story. And when we go back and we say to him, Naomi Self, there was no Army nurse ever named Naomi Self. And he says, well, you know, you guys wanted a name. I told you at the time it wasn't the real name, but I said I'd give you a name. And so then he changes the story.
Oh, he changes the story again, which makes it even more suspect. I mean, yeah. But do you have any doubts that somebody contacted him and said, we need three caskets?
I don't think they contacted him. I think they contacted somebody else at the Ballard Funeral Home. And Glenn Dennis worked at the Ballard Funeral Home in 1947. I mean, we can prove that. He's in the city directory as an embalmer at the funeral home. He wasn't a mortician at the time. He later became a mortician,
right.
But he was an embalmer. So clearly he was there. And what I think happened was the guy they actually contacted had told Glenn Dennis this story, and once that guy died, Glenn Dennis took the story as his own.
Okay, all right, that's possible. I can buy that, but it's still a dramatic story all by itself.
Absolutely a dramatic story, but other things that Glenn Dennis told us did not check out. So we're looking at this, and we say, well, that's a marvelous story. Where did it come from?
All right, what about the lieutenant for the military who gave one of the original broadcasts, or the radio station owner at the time? Didn't something strange happen there, too? They broadcast this, and then the radio station owner was basically threatened to pull that story?
Walter Haught had gone to the four media outlets in Roswell, Walter Haught being the lieutenant, the base
right.
affairs officer. And there were four media outlets, two daily newspapers in Roswell, two radio stations in 1947. And so Glenn Dennis, or Walter Haught gave that story. The owner of KGFL, the radio station in Roswell, went to Corona and found Mac Brazel, brought him back, and did an hour-long interview with him. What the people who worked at the radio station and the minority owner, Judd Roberts, told us was that they were told by government officials, if they broadcast the interview with Mac Brazel, they had better find new businesses because they would lose their license and they wouldn't be in the radio business anymore. So, yeah, we have, and I have the videotaped interviews with these people telling us these stories. And so we know that some of this stuff went down the way it's been reported. So, yeah, there was phone calls to the radio station telling them not to broadcast their interview with Mac Brazel.
And in those days, government could really have some muscle.
I think in today's environment, and again, the environment today is different than it was in the 1990s, but I think in today's environment, if the government came to a media outlet and said, you know, this story is going to be harmful to national security, I think that the a lot of the reporters and a lot of those outlets would say, "Okay, we'll sit on this story if you can convince us that it's in the interest of national security."
You know,
I think in the 80s and 90s they would have said, "Screw you guys."
Yeah, this is probably. You know what's so cool for us? We've been on our station KBIM AM in Roswell for a number of years now, and just the mere fact that we're broadcast into Roswell is kind of cool for us. Because of everything that went down there.